Hi folks, welcome to episode 1 of the Ukulele Rocks podcast with me, Mr. C. On today's show we have Record of the Week, this week submitted by Aaron from Harlington. Chord of the Week, a rocky derivative for you this time. Piece of the Week, the performance popular cowboy stroll, show and tell without the show. A multi-string instrument this time. Our interview today comes from Mr. Dan Budd of Funky Punk Music and Ukulele Jam Thornbury. We talk education, large group playing and tea or coffee. So, let's get going, shall we? For this episode, Record of the Week comes from Aaron from Harlington. Harlington is a great village near Flitwick off the M1, just in case you were wondering. Aaron has been a regular watcher, listener to the live streams I've been doing every Tuesday and Thursday. More details about those on the website at www.ukulelerocks.co.uk. By all accounts, he's been really quite taken with this piece. This is Fanfare, Stepping Up. Nicely played there, Aaron. I happen to know that was played on a very exclusive Skylanders adorned Mikala soprano ukulele. If you'd like to submit a record of the week, then find your favourite piece from the website, record it on a mobile phone or a tablet, and send it in to me at www.ukulelerocks.co.uk. All the contact details are on the website, and who knows? You might be a future week's Record of the Week. Time now for Chord of the Week. This episode's Chord of the Week has more rockier tendencies. It's a version of a chord called G5. Now, chords depicted as a 5 mean there's no third of the scale in them. This leads to a harder sound, and you can tell the difference between the standard G chord, very sweet sounding at the top, and the G5, much harder sound. Guitarists play a type of chord called a power chord, and most of rock music is based on these power chords. For guitarists, the power chords usually consist of two or three notes, the root, or the first note of the scale, the fifth, or the dominant note, and often the root, an octave, or eight notes higher. For us ukulele players, 5 chords usually consist of the root note doubled, so with G5, that would be 2 Gs, and the fifth note doubled, so 2 Ds. we go. G5 is made by playing the open G string, then your first finger in the second fret of the C string, your second finger in the third fret of the E string, and your little finger, or your fourth finger, in the fifth fret of the A string. So there you go. This week's chord of the week, G5. Episode 1's piece of the week is the performance popular Cowboy Stroll. This is a piece for beginners in two sections. Section number 1 has you playing in fours on some of the open strings. You're going to play 4 times on the A string, 4 times on the E string, 4 times on the G, and 4 times on the E string again. Now obviously when we play that, there's going to be no gaps going between the strings. And we do play that quite a few times, section 1, just with the open strings. Section 2 of the Cowboy Stroll needs your first finger onto the E string, but we're going to change. Instead of playing with 4 note patterns, we're going to play in 8 note patterns. So your first finger on the E string in space number 1, or fret number 1, and we're going to play it 8 times. Lift it off to the open E. Jump to the G. Back to the E, and again we play that section 2, with no gaps between the strings or the fingers. Starting with the first finger on the second string, lift it off, jump to the G, and jump back to the E. Section 2. Now it is a longer piece for beginners. It comes in at 2 minutes and 18 seconds, which is quite a long time to concentrate and work and think. But with a backing track, I think it works quite well. Cowboy Stroll, like all pieces featured in Piece of the Week, is available on the website at www.ukulelerocks.co.uk, which also includes all the backing tracks, and you can print out copies of the sheet music if you wish. Just before we get to our interview this week, it's time now for Show and Tell without the show. This week's featured instrument is the Ashbury AU or LU 68E 6 string tenor ukulele. This belongs to me. I only bought this instrument so many, many moons ago from Hobgoblin Music when it had a branch in the Custard Factory in Birmingham. I just joined a band again after my previous life of playing keyboards in rock bands, and I wanted to play ukulele in a band that already had a guitarist, a bass, drums and vocals. They were open to the idea, as it just really wasn't being done back then, but I needed an instrument. And as usual, I was a bit brassic at the time, i.e. skinned, no money. So went down to Hobgoblin with my beautiful Mexican Strat in Olympic white with a maple neck. Anyhow, a deal was done, and the high gloss tenor six string was mine. Six string ukuleles double the A string in unison, so you have two notes the same. And it also doubles the C string, but one string's an octave higher than the other, or eight notes apart. It gives a fantastic ringing strum to it. A lot of sustain as well. This particular model also comes with an electric under-saddle pickup fitted as standard, thus the E labelling after its name. It comes with a volume control and a two-band EQ, treble and bass, which is, it's alright, it's not a bad pickup, it's pretty nondescript. It's not a named one in this model anyhow. It was great for me playing, because of course this made me as loud as everybody else. I played it for quite a few gigs, but it did kind of have its limitations for me. While the strum sound was great, if you wanted to finger pick it, you had to be quite careful about how you chose your patterns of picking, because on this particular model, the G, the low G, is tuned an octave below the normal high G tuning, and it's also a metal wound string, so it does tend to sound a little bit boomy, especially when you're picking it amongst the other strings. You have to take a bit of care with it. That octave C really stands out. However, if you do strum it with a bit of passion, then it really does sound good. Just last thing to say about it, it is a strange kind of shape. It's a tenor ukulele, but the bottom bout looks like somebody's kind of squished it, and it's very much wider than on a standard tenor ukulele. It's very blingy, lots of abalone sort of mother of pearl inlay around the sound hole, and are just backing up the purfling around the edge of the top of the model. It is very high gloss. If that's not to your taste, then the instrument won't suit you, but it's a good solid, substantial, weighty instrument, and I've got to admit, I don't play it very often these days, but I do notice, looking on the Ashbury Guitars website, it seems not to be still in production, as it doesn't seem to be listed on there, so maybe I'll hold on to it for a bit longer. Our interviewee this time on the Ukulele Rocks podcast is Mr. Dan Budd from Funky Punk Music and Ukulele Jam. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Hey, Jules. Great to be with you today.
So thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. How's your day been?
Well, not bad. I've been doing some streaming this afternoon and a couple of different sessions on different platforms, and then a bit of homeschooling with my young one today.
It's been a busy old day making videos and doing the stuff. Such as is the world at the moment, because we're in the middle of lockdown.
Isn't it?
Well, I wanted to get you on today to talk really a little bit about your live streaming, but mainly about the ukulele sessions and the ukulele group sessions that you run. So my first question is, you know, pretty predictable, but how long have you been involved in ukulele playing, and what was your background getting into it?
Well, let's start with the second part of that question, I guess. I've always played the guitar, like a lot of ukulele players have come from that instrument, first of all, since I was about 7 or 8 playing guitar. I grew up going to church. That gave me a great outlet for playing the guitar in a band. Then at school, I was playing for assemblies as well. So lots of opportunities, which I think is really important when learning an instrument, to have opportunities to play in front of other people, make mistakes and learn from it. And dial forward kind of like 35 years later or something, I guess at the age of about 40, I'm 50 now, I bought my first ukulele. I was teaching guitar, and one of my guitar students dared to bring a ukulele. I've never even seen one properly before. I think it was a SpongeBob one.
Oh, I had one of those when they first came out. They were terrible.
Fantastic. Yeah, they were terrible. And I thought it was a toy, but you could tune it. And I was surprised that you could actually tune the strings independently. I've seen ones where the string starts at the top, goes down to the bridge, and comes back up again, the same string. So I didn't realize that you could tune them properly. And that then got me to buy one and led me to the journey where I am today.
Wow. So out of the, you're sat here now, although that our listeners haven't got the benefit of this, I can see behind you a number of ukuleles hanging on your wall. Do you have a preferred size of instrument, or even a preferred model of instrument that you like to play?
No, not particularly. I guess my ethos when I became a guitar teacher, which was about, 20 years ago, was I didn't want to teach in school or private lessons. I didn't want to be playing an instrument that was so much better than the instrument that my student would be playing. And I still have that kind of ethos with ukulele today. So I'd love to have, you know, the same ukulele as Jake Shimmer Bukuru, you know, one of these Hawaiian solid koa, £7,500, £10,000 ukuleles. That would be great. But I would feel that when teaching somebody, you know, that it would so much better sounding than the one they've got. It would give them an excuse, if you like, to say, well, you know, of course yours sounds good. It costs the same as my house or something. So that and my wife would never let me buy one. So yes. I just like playing the same kind of instrument as somebody else is playing. I did have about 100 ukuleles. I sold quite a few of them when the lockdown happened, of course, and money dried up. Mainly tenor, some concerts as well. I tend to stick pickups in them so I can kind of amplify them and just enjoy different kind of looks of ukulele, different sounds of ukulele. So I like having a few different ukuleles to chop and change.
I quite agree. I have one or two myself. Yeah, one or two. Before we get... It is, yes. Ukulele acquisition syndrome, I believe it's called. Yeah. Before we get onto the more serious sort of elements of what we're going to discuss and have a chat about today, we have a segment on here called Chord of the Week, where we feature a great sounding chord that, you know, people may not be so familiar with. Do you have a favourite chord, or something that you could share with us?
Ooh, a favourite chord. I tell you, the chord as a ukulele player, but also as a guitarist, that I've always loved, and really it's the set of chords, the diminished seventh chord.
Ooh.
So, and the reason for that, and let's just play one now.
Mm.
There you go. The reason I love them is a couple of reasons, really. One is I feel like they're the forgotten chord. When we talk about chord families,
yes.
And we have the three major chords and the three minor chords. I call them cousins, but the relative minor, the relative major, C, A minor, F, D minor, G, E minor. Then we often seem to forget, well, or what gets left out is that elusive seventh chord, you know, this number seven chord, which is a diminished seventh chord. So it's often forgotten or not bothered with, and it's got such an unusual kind of sound to it and character to it. The other thing I love about it is that every three frets, it kind of becomes the same chord again, so the same notes replicate. And that, as much as anything, intrigues me. So as we shift it up the fretboard, all those notes are exactly the same, just in a higher register, and you can play all 12 of the diminished seventh chords in three frets, because then they kind of replicate each other.
So, for a lot of reasons,
just love it.
So earn your money a little bit. So describe, how do we make this diminished seventh chord of which you speak?
Well, there's a kind of a music theory side of it, which I could go on for hours about, George.
No, I was just thinking about fingers on the frets, to be honest. So physically.
The physicality of it, and this is how I describe it to people. If you start off with a G chord in the proper position for G, and then all we do then is jump all three fingers vertically up one string each. So take the shape of G, jump it up one string, all three fingers jump up one string, and then we add the little finger on the bottom string in the third fret if we're still in the G position, sort of thing. Mm. So jump the G up a string, add the little finger on the A string at the bottom, and that gives us the...
I think that's a great way of describing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have seen people using bar chords to make the diminished shape as well.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's a great way of describing it. Thank you for that. I enjoyed that. So come on then, let's get on to the serious stuff. Talk to me about Ukulele Jam Thornbury. How did the very well-attended sessions, how did they start?
I told you that I was originally a guitar teacher. One of my students brought a ukulele to the... what do they say? Don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Don't bring a ukulele to a guitar lesson.
Or a mandolin to a ukulele group, yeah.
I can't even believe you said that word, Jules. as he has a banjo hanging behind him. So I bought my ukulele, and I guess a couple of years went past. I was running... What I still have is a school's business where me and 10 other coaches teach music in schools. That's the funky punk music business. We teach guitar, bass guitar, drums, keyboards, singing. Sometimes do a bit of violin if we need to do some of the classical instruments as well. But mainly kind of band instruments. And I've been doing this for kind of 10 years or more in school. And I just thought to myself one day, I would like to have a bit of a break from working with children and young people. That's terrible, I know. What an action. How could I work with adults and do it in a group scenario? And I thought, well, first thought was choirs, but I thought, one, I'm not a great singer, and two, there's lots of choirs around already. And the second thought I had was, I wonder if a ukulele would work in a group collective. Now, that seems daft, Jules, for me to be saying that, because it's like...
It does these days. It does these days.
My life now is, you know, and so many groups around the country.
Very much.
I had not an idea at all. The only thing I knew about ukulele was the SpongeBob one that this boy bought to the lesson, and the one that I bought from a folk music shop in Bristol on Park Street. And I knew nothing else at all. I didn't know there were groups in the country. I didn't know there were any performers in the world. I didn't even know the name of Jake Shimokbakuru.
So timeline-wise, this is shortly after you've discovered the ukulele,
yeah,
that you're starting thinking about putting into a group scenario.
Yep.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Seven years ago, I was actually sat in a restaurant in the town of Thornbury where we live, and I was doing a bit of a kind of a business, you know, kind of reevaluation of my school's business, and I looked at the specials board and the menu on the wall, and I thought, that's what I need, some variety. I need to be doing something different, providing another item on the menu, another service, if you like. And I just came up with the idea of group ukulele. I put an advert in the local press, said, does anyone want to learn ukulele? I honestly thought I would just get a bunch of people interested in playing George Formby. I had no desire to be doing that myself, quite like him now, but I thought that's what we're going to get probably, but that's fine because that will get me kind of a group of adults and we can just start learning the instrument properly there. And I know this is important to you, Jules, and people like you and me are having to drum this out time and time again. You know, the ukulele is a respectable standalone instrument. It's not a small guitar, it's not a toy, it can be, but it's not kind of like the easy way to get into guitar or other instruments. It can be. It is a standalone, respected instrument, and the people that are kind of the masters of it around the world, you know, it is a beautiful thing to behold. So I wanted to get people to become musicians, and ukulele was the way we were going to do it.
Well, it's interesting you talk about you wanted to get people to become musicians, because the next question kind of links to that. When you've got such a large group, and I'm sort of preempting here, I understand, I do know for a fact you have quite a large group in Thornbury. What's your average turnout there?
Well, between 45 and 50. When we're meeting together.
So if you've got, well, of course, yes. But so you've got this many. How do you manage to accommodate beginners into a setup like that? Because it must be quite awe-inspiring for somebody to want to come and turn up to such a well-established group.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because from a business point of view, as much as anything, and this is a business for me, it's not a hobby. Yes, I'm 50, but I'm not retired yet. And you know, it's a business. So I want to do it professionally, and I need, you know, I know that people will try it out and then a small percentage will stop. So I need another small percentage of people, or bigger, coming in the other end. And mostly those are going to be people that are not musicians and are absolutely new to the instrument. So it really just flows out of who I am, to be honest, that I'm always looking to be inclusive of whoever's in the group. That's not just for ukulele, it's anything I do. I kind of look out to the group of people in front of me and think to myself, you know, I want to communicate, I want to bring with me as many of these people as I can. And if I leave one of them behind, I kind of count it as a failure. So musically speaking, if we've got beginners there, if I can see people I don't know, I try and get an idea from looking at their ukulele. Is it a SpongeBob ukulele? Well, they're probably a beginner.
So it's on thin ice there, I think.
Yeah. Is it Jake Shimabukuro's ukulele? Then they may be a kind of an established musician. Who knows? I'll get an idea, see if I can get a message to them, and then I'll look to kind of pitch the session in a way that includes them and brings them on the journey, at least for the first part of the session, and then we'll kind of go a bit further. Hopefully they'll feel out of their depth. I don't mean to be mean with that, but they'll kind of be left thinking, wow, if I were to practice my ukulele or come next week again, then I can get on that journey and do the first 45 minutes, not just the first 30 minutes.
You're doing a very good job of leading on from question to question. I appreciate that very much. So the next question, how do you manage to keep attendance consistent at your sessions? Or do you actually find you need to?
To be honest, I do work hard at making the set. Here's the key, and this is true for my school's business as well as Ukulele Jam, my coffee shop ukulele group business, is I make sure it's fun. And that's the most important thing to me. Not music education as an academic intellectual exercise. I'm not a big believer, Jules, in grades when it comes to music. I think if you want to do them. You know, if you're intellectually kind of stimulated, if you like exams, if you like study per se, like academic study, then grades are great for you, and you can do grades in ukulele as with other musical instruments.
I think sometimes it's dependent on who's making that decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you have older players and adult players, then yes, the grades probably don't suit them. But if you have younger children coming with parents who are supporting and encouraging, he said, with inverted commas, then perhaps some of them do like them to progress through the grades because they've seen that as a way of progression or a mark of progression. I'm not sure I completely adhere to that or agree with it. but that's just my experience.
I think and you can edit me afterwards, Jules, to your heart's content.
Would I dare?
But my personal ethos, and this is based on my own personal experience of me growing as a musician and how I got there, is there's plenty of other people doing the kind of traditional classical approach of grades and the academic, what I call the academic approach. I like to fit in a different part of the spectrum of learning a musical instrument, which is doing it for fun. Now, that doesn't mean that it's less quality or that the musician at the end of it will be of a lesser standard. If somebody were to suggest that, then we could both take them to all of the top best famous rock groups in the world and introduce them to 90% of the guitarists who were self-taught, didn't do
absolutely
great,
you don't know, read music,
etc. So yeah, that's right. Yeah. And
all those things that are meant to earmark you as a musician, you know, which are just really not important. I mean, one of the things I find that helps my younger players and my to really motivate them and keep their attendance at my sessions are performances. Because it's exciting to look forward to a performance, to have a goal to work for. What sort of performance opportunities are there for you with your group?
Oh, well,
I mean, that's an awful lot of people there to get into a performance venue, I would imagine.
Oh, no, it's great. Before the COVID lockdown, I guess we were doing 2, sometimes 3, maybe 4 gigs a week on a busy week, but certainly 1 a week. And I'm just a massive believer. As I said, when I was learning the guitar as a young guitarist, having opportunities to play in church and to play in school for the assemblies was huge for me. Like I say, as much as anything, the mistakes you make, you learn from. The bad experiences as good as the good experiences. I had a wretched experience playing the violin in assembly one time. I was really kind of like a below grade 1 violin.
So have we all, my friends. So have we all.
And I started playing, and the deputy head stood up and said, "Oh, stop. That sounds awful." You know, just the words you want to hear.
Nice.
Bad a tune. Somebody get the man in tune. And they got me in tune, and mortified, I kind of carried on and played the rest of the piece badly, I'm sure. But just that kind of musician at the age of, let's say, 9, being stopped mid-performance and kind of told, "That sounds terrible," was one of the bad experiences. But you learn from that, and you hopefully become more resilient, and you learn to tune your instrument before you start playing.
I think that's true. I think that's what's bringing a lot of adults to our instrument, to the ukulele, because they've had such bad experiences and bad teaching through so-called classical instruments, that when they're seeing an instrument that seems to be accessible, well, it's not seeming, it is accessible, as the ukulele, I think they're feeling more confident about the instrument.
Yeah. Well, I said to you that, you know, the fun is at the heart of it. Now, I'm not talking about let's be silly or let's not do anything of substance. When I say fun, I mean this. I will kind of promise that I will entertain you as I lead you and teach you in a group situation. I'm not quite so entertaining in a one-on-one lesson. I think I probably am, but I'm, you know, I'm myself. I'm funny. I'm larger than life. I'm daft. I compensate for the fact that I'm not a great singer. And I'm not the world's best ukulele player. I'm probably not even the best in Thornbury. But I don't care for that. I like to just be larger than life, which is not difficult for me, and just perform. So when I'm leading a session, a teaching session, or a Thursday night jam at Costa Coffee that we do, then I treat it like a gig. We also go out and do gigs, and that provides a brilliant outlet for the people who are learning. And I say to people, you only have to come to one of our sessions, and then you can come on a gig. And all the people in the group say to the new people, "You've got to come on the gigs, it's amazing." We started getting invited by John Lewis to come and do gigs in the store, which is a big store in Cribbs Causeway, just off the M5 just down the road from us, and we would go and do things on behalf of our local hospital, Southmead Hospital in John Lewis, but also they'd invite us for like product launches or when the Christmas season starts at the end of September.
How wonderful.
We'd come and sing Christmas songs in the first week of October to launch the Christmas. That sounds hideous, I know. But getting people who are not musicians, who are just learning their instrument in the first week or two of learning, coming and standing on stage, as it were, with me. We have a back row, so you can go and stand in the back row if you want to. They may only play the C chord all the way through, but they're playing, they're singing, joining in. Mm. They got a big smile on their face, and it adds to the whole thing. I'm a firm believer in that if you engage yourself in it, in the fun. See, what I'm trying to do, Jules, is I'm trying to not just get people engaging and listening to music or singing music. I'm basically saying to them, come and be in the band. If you like the Beatles, I know you're not a big fan. If you like
the Beatles, I've just lost half my listenership. Thank you.
if you like whatever band it might be, then the Turtles, let's say, from the, if you like them, then come and be in the band. You know, not my band. Come and actually be in that band and stand on stage and perform as if you were in that band. And it's actually an incredible way, especially for people who are a bit older than us, who have not grown up plugging into iPods and Walkman, you know, and their engagement with music is put the radio on or, you know, put some vinyl on or whatever, maybe a CD. But to actually say, come and be in the band, come and sing and play, you're not a musician yet, but join in with us and see the smile on the audience's faces as we're performing, puts a huge smile on their face and encourages their musical journey, and they come back next week and carry on learning. And they say, I'm going to practice this week because I was rubbish, but I'm going to be better next week. And that's right.
You mentioned that you don't mind dafting around and having fun in the front of your group. I'm just wondering if you could share with us what's one of your favourite moments of leading the ukulele jam, Thornbury. You know, what have you had a special moment that you could recall?
Yeah, I mean, lots and lots. It's rare that we have an evening or any of my sessions. I do, before lockdown, probably three sessions a week, a main jam, and then I do a beginner's group during the daytime in a different cafe. The cafe's open, but there's other punters in there, but some of them even come and listen to us on a regular basis. But we have like 20 people in a beginner's group during the daytime, and then I do another daytime session for like a intermediate improvers group, and then we do the main jam on a Thursday evening. So many special moments, to be honest. Not a session goes by where we don't just have just so much fun. And part of it is because I'm just so spontaneous, and I am careful and sensitive and nice and don't say anything outrageous too often. But I just look at the people that are there and try and lighten the mood and have fun and tell jokes whilst we're doing it, you know. And if there's somebody there that's been there for months and can take it, poke a bit of fun, you know, you know, or whatever it might be. Now, I have had some incredible kind of times where, let me say this, Jules, and I this won't kind of sound too heavy. With a church background, I was used to playing music in church and then for many, many years leading music in church, including on big stages, kind of church gatherings. And the aim in that setting, that was with guitar, the aim in that setting is to... I guess to engage people in a spiritual experience. Now, we know that music has a spirituality about it. You only have to look back at the kind of the music from the last 60 years, and you can see so much spirituality. Don't just mean in the lyrics, in the music itself, in its ability to connect with your soul and emotions. So a few times in my ukulele Thursday night sessions, me personally, all of a sudden, I've forgotten that I'm in the coffee shop and I think I'm in church, and I don't even go to church anymore, to be honest, but it feels like the same thing that we've made a spiritual connection with each other, with the music. Now, nobody's going to come to my group anymore if I tell you that, but because it might sound scary.
I'm sure they still will.
It's just that the engaging in the music and doing it as a corporate experience, it's what churches aim to do. To the corporate singing that brings that moment of euphoria, of joy and connection with each other and with something deeper than just 50 people in a room. And a few times we've had that and I've gone away thinking, wow, that was pretty special. That's not me. That's just the corporate experience of us together and feeling.
I don't think that was heavy. I think that was rather lovely. I'm very honest. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Might put my prices up then. Good.
Well, you know. So come on then. We have to have a little bit of black and white, a bit of yin and yang here. You've told us about the good experiences. What about an embarrassing moment? There's got to be an embarrassing moment leading groups. So many. Yeah, I mean, you've already mentioned childhood violin playing. So what's the adult version, Mr. Bud?
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of those. As they come up into my mind, was doing quite a big gig once. Now, this, to be honest, this is a guitar story, but just imagine this big gig, and I was a bit younger, in a band. We used to play to like 10,000 people and all that. So we were pretty good and did very well around Europe and everything, and American record contract. I remember one time being on stage, big crowd, and I go for my big guitar solo. I've got long permed hair, leather jacket, cowboy boots, the whole thing.
Picture it.
Richie Sambora, Eat Your Heart Out. And I went for my solo, and I kind of threw my guitar just up into a bit of a pose to do my solo, stamped my right foot down, and realised, rookie error, forgot to run my cable through my guitar strap, and I just stood on my strap and pulled it straight out of the guitar. Wow, Jules, I just carried on playing the solo. And then at the end of the song, I bent down to kind of adjust my effects on the floor and quickly picked up my cable and plugged it back in again.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyone noticing? So there's that.
I think we've all done that. Although now I've got to admit, I do teach all my people, tuck it through your strap, boys and girls. Put it through your strap.
Always.
Absolutely, yeah, because the number of times I've stepped on it.
When I'm leading ukulele sessions, it's pretty raw in terms of it's not as polished. You know, even when I'm doing my online sessions now, I'm not really practicing the set list before. I kind of throw the 250 songs in our songbooks up in the air. However they land, I kind of put them in the set list for that day. And then like today, Pinball Wizard, song 12, I'm like, I can't believe I put that in there. You know, and I hadn't even seen it until I got to near the end of the set list, and I've got to play Pinball Wizard. I haven't played it in a year.
It's a great version. I play your version. I play your arrangement of that in the band. I do, yes. Very good. Thanks for that.
Yeah, it's probably a bit simplified, but it's, and singing and playing and all that. Yeah. So plenty of times live, as well as, on the streaming, but plenty of times live, probably every few months, I'll just have to stop in the middle of the song and say, I'm really sorry, I've actually forgotten how the chorus goes. Because a lot of these songs are before my time.
Absolutely. I had a similar arrangement this morning. I was playing along with the backing track and got completely lost in the wrong place. But I managed to actually turn the lyrics around on my live stream in the teaching. And it had some good reactions.
I don't know if you have this problem, Jules, but
go on.
With the streaming, you know, like if I was doing a gig, you know, back in the day, there'd be a sound engineer. If I was on telly or something, I've done some telly stuff, you know, you've got the technical guys kind of behind the camera or the ladies or whatever, you know, doing the sound. You're never in charge of it yourself. And now, you know, we're having to, I'm looking at like several cameras at once. I know you do this. I'm looking at lyrics. I'm looking at kind of the streaming on my computer so I can check that the sound's okay. And all of that whilst trying to remember to smile and trying to remember the lyrics to Build Me Up, Buttercup.
And reading the incoming comments.
Reading the comments of somebody going, you know, I had my hair cut today, like somebody said earlier. And it kind of throws you a little bit.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, plenty of
But it's all though. Good fun. It's all good fun.
Love it.
Well, I'd like to move on. We're nearly in the end. It's time now for a little segment of our interview segment we call 10 Quiet Queries. So these are 10 questions. These are either or questions. You can validate or or you can't validate your name. It's up to you. You can expand on them as much or as little as you like. At the end of your 10 questions, providing you answer them satisfactorily, you've got 30 seconds to plug your heart out. Tell us everything we need to know about Mr. Daniel Budd and his goings on, online or offline, anything you'd like people to know. Yeah. Then's your time. So, are you ready for your 10 yep. quiet queries? All right, number one, chocolate or crisps?
Crisps.
Tea or coffee?
Oh, that is difficult. Tea just recently.
Okay. Stripes or dots?
Slimming stripes.
Okay. Personal favourite of mine, this one. Bouzouki or balalaika?
Every time, bouzouki, because I'm the biggest fan of Greece, specifically Kefalonia, and I got a bouzouki and I love it.
Okay. Dog or cat?
Dog.
Lake or beach?
Beach.
Ironing or cleaning?
Ironing.
Wow.
Watch the telly while you're doing it.
Okay. Cookery lesson or dancing lesson?
Cookery lesson.
Passenger or driver?
Passenger.
Wow. And finally, soprano or tenor?
Tenor.
Okay.
Recently, I've been looking at sopranos.
Right.
And sopraninos.
Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you very much for those. You did surprise me on a few of those answers, because part of my fun here is trying to predict what people are going to actually say. That's great. Right. Well, I very much enjoyed your 10 quiet queries. So you have 30 seconds, please. Could you share with us everything we need to know about Mr. Dan Budd and your goings on online or offline that you'd like people to know about?
Thank you. So currently I'm streaming through Funky Punk Music. We've got Facebook, we've got YouTube, other socials as well. The website is funkypunk.org.uk, and all the live ukulele streaming is now going through that. We're doing sessions every week, probably 3 sessions. The set lists are available online. The songs, a new song every week we're doing, available online. And we just love people to join in with us and learn more ukulele, have more fun doing ukulele.
10 seconds.
Experience something different by engaging with a different set of musicians, with a different teacher like myself than other ones. Although, you know, stick with Jules.
And almost to the second. Almost to the second.
I just realised I don't want to try and steal your people away, George.
No, it's absolutely fine. No, it's absolutely fine.
I have encouraged my people to listen to your material.
And I to you. And I to you. So there's a mutual appreciation society going on, I'm telling you, yeah. Dan, thank you very much for joining us today on the Ukulele Rocks podcast. I really enjoyed that. It's been a lot of fun. And I know we often quite have a chat, but I appreciate you joining us for this sort of more formal interview style. So thank you very much for that.
Amazing. Thanks for having me, Jules, and good luck with the rest of lockdown.
So there you go. That brings us to the end of episode 1 of the Ukulele Rocks podcast. My thanks to my guest today, Mr. Dan Budd from Funky Punk Music and Ukulele Jam Thornbury, and also to Aaron for his record of the week. Great playing there, Aaron. Remember, you can submit your chord of the week or your record of the week through the website at www.ukulelerocks.co.uk. When you're there, you can check out all our social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter. And also, there's links through to the brand new YouTube channel with all the tutorials on to match the pieces that are on the website. So thanks for listening this time. Until we next meet, ciao.